Broadcast Studios. This is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
I hope you're having an amazing Thursday. Welcome to ABQ Connect. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio. It's good to see your face, Paul.
Yeah. Is this legit? This legal? We're okay?
Yeah,
on the books,
I think we're, right? What are we, four and a half feet, 5 feet? We're almost where we're supposed to be.
All right. Good deal. Well, I'm happy to be here and to see you and your smiling face and, of course, the Calvary grounds and the everything. It's very hot out there. And,
it is. Boy, we've had some unusual warm weather, but what I like is the wind is not blowing.
Yep.
We've had a little bit of rain last
more than
couple,
a little
three
bit,
days.
Especially for June. Normally, June is a dry and hot one, and 2+ inches, at least my house on the west side, it was amazing. That was one of the best rains we've had in years.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and we live in a beautiful place. I mean, I drove up to the mountains here last weekend and just took a look at the forests and how they're doing. Took a short walk, and it was looking pretty nice. Looks pretty healthy up there, just in the Sandias. I'm really looking forward to getting out and, you know, going up to the Jemez, looking around a little bit up the Jemez. I love to go down south around Ruidoso.
Mm-hmm.
And some of those areas, but I haven't been able to get down there so far.
Yeah, well, there are plenty of places to go and see and do things. And one of the things I really grew to appreciate about New Mexico even more coming out of the COVID-19 situation is, you know, that was some of the only stuff available for quite a while. And I'm not going to just take that for granted anymore. My family, my kids are nuts about the Rio Grande. They are playing in that river every chance they get. Mm. Swimming pools are not open. You mm-hmm. get 90 degree heat and no swimming pools. That's still rough stuff for a lot of kids who just, you can't really go out and play around here with that kind of heat and the direct sunlight.
Hey, I think the Rio Grande is amazing. In fact, one of the things that I miss is we used to float down the Rio Grande River every year. The city of Albuquerque sponsored an event where we would have canoes and mm-hmm. rubber rafts and different things and kind of float down. But there ended up being some incidents. And I think probably most of them were alcohol related, where people would just have a few too many beers or something. And, you know, you tip over in the water and you've lost a little bit of your faculties and it gets scary sometimes. So be careful.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, we keep them in the shallow area. It'll be interesting to see how the river's changed in the places we go with that couple of inches of rain. It obviously, it was pretty low with no rain, just the melting snow and the mountains coming down, and now it's likely to be a little higher. So we will definitely be cautious about that whole situation for sure.
Well, Paul, mentioned to our listeners, you're a frequent contributor to this program. We appreciate your time very much. As the president of the Rio Grande Foundation, you spend about 99.9% of your time taking a look at economic issues around the state, everything to do with politics, and that's why we wanted to get you in, because Tuesday we had the primary election, and I haven't spent a lot of time researching the Democrat candidates, and I'd really like for you to tell us, in the primary election, how are the Democrat representatives in our state legislature and Senate going to change?
Well, there are so many issues going on right now, some of them interrelated, but certainly Tuesday night was an earthquake in New Mexico politics. We've had a pretty progressive House and the leadership of the House on the Democrat side for a fair number of years, but we've had a more broad conservative is a strong word, moderate coalition, both of some mostly moderates in the Republican Party, which have supported John Arthur Smith, the Senate Finance Committee chairman, and his defeat is the biggest by far in relevance from Tuesday night. But now we're in a situation where Democrats of the progressive stripe have unseated those more moderate Democrats, and the Republicans are going to have some opportunities here to run in some more conservative places like Deming, pitting a progressive against a Republican, presumably a conservative. But there's also some pretty liberal districts where the Republicans are not going to show very well. Richard Martinez, of course, up in Espanola. Espanola is not an area inclined towards Republicans. Richard Martinez did seem, he was one of those kind of moderate guys. Of course, got popped for a DUI, very well known. Governor called for him to resign. He was defeated in his race for re-election. So the progressives had a pretty strong track record. They had a ton of money groups like Planned Parenthood, groups like Everytown for Gun Safety, funded by Michael Bloomberg and some others. They spent a ton of money, and New Mexico is going to be a very different state come January of 2021. It's important to note we have a special session on June the 18th. I don't expect a lot to happen. I didn't before, but given the results that we saw on Tuesday, I think our governor is going to say, we can shift some balls around under the table and keep the budget going and then, quote, solve the problem come January. And solving it, in my estimation, is going to mean taking some money out of the permanent fund, which was anathema to John Arthur Smith. That was kind of his known thing as being a bulwark against tapping into the land-grant permanent fund.
You know, I know a couple of investment advisors that I really like, and I've liked working with them in the past, and I've recommended friends of mine that have come across large sums of money get involved with these people. And the reason that they do is because when they want to go spend money, these investment advisors, even though they're managing your money, they're like bulldogs. They want you to keep that money in savings. They want to keep it growing. They want to keep it investing. They don't want you to spend it on frivolous things. And that's probably the same thing people want to do with the Superfund money. They want to keep it where it needs to be and don't use it unless there's absolutely a tragic emergency. And primarily it's supposed to be used for education, isn't it, Paul?
Right. That's the big area of use. Both K-12 and higher education is substantially funded by the Land Grant Permanent Fund. It's a big fund. It's put there thanks to the oil and gas industry and some investments made with that money. Depending on the latest stock market gyrations, we're talking 18, 19, getting close to $20 billion. So there's obvious reasons why the progressives have really been eager to tap into this money. That's before. That's for pre-K, early childhood, really getting kids taken out of the home at a very young age and putting them in institutional settings. I don't think the data's there. I think it's going to be a huge waste of money and potentially harmful to a lot of kids. So that's why we've opposed it. John Arthur Smith and the moderates and many Republicans have been more of don't tap it because we just want to keep this money there for the future and growing, which is a valid reason. But I think the more important issue is what are you going to actually fund with that money? Now we have the added issue of COVID-19, the economic shutdown, the decline in oil and gas. And if John Arthur Smith had stayed in there, you might see some tougher decisions coming out of Santa Fe. The way I see it now, it's much more of a green light to the progressives to tap into that money and to cover up for some misguided budgetary decisions and overspending in recent years. So the taps are going to be flowing strong for more money coming out of the permanent fund, assuming that they can get the legislation through, which I suspect they will, unless, again, the Republicans have a big showing in November. And the voters will ultimately have a question to answer on the ballot. But
so, Paul, when you look at the budget, and it's approximately $1.7 billion higher than it was the previous year that was approved in February, you're not seeing really too many adjustments to that budget. It's kind of like we'll put a Band-Aid on it till we get to January 2021, 60-day session. And
that's what I'm expecting during the very short likely session here, June 18th. Maybe it'll last a day, a couple days. There's obviously, you know, less money coming from New Mexico, tax dollars, less money from the oil and gas patch, but you have all that federal stimulus money, and that is stuff, you know, some decisions need to be made with that. We just saw in today's paper, private schools, the Trump administration is trying to help them out, manage their budgets. I mean, these are institutions that, you know, one could argue, certainly, and I think there's some people out there who would like to have seen private schools say, thanks APS for the suggestion. We're going to come up with our own solutions and keep the kids going forward in the school year. They did not do that. That's probably the safe move liability wise, but it's a tough move from a budget perspective. And, now we're going to have a big food fight here in New Mexico because, as you might imagine, given our governor, her lack of support for school choice, her lack of support for education reform, her administration is going to be pushing against Trump and their guidance on how to use some of the CARES Act dollars that are earmarked for education. I do think that the governor, unfortunately, will win this battle because she really has the power. It's a discussion item or a direction from DeVos and the Trump administration, no more, no less. So, in other states where you have more advocates for private schools and school choice, you might see a different decision. But again, elections have consequences. I believe President Obama said that.
Paul, what comes to my mind right now is about a $300 million allocation to early childhood education that was one of the things approved in the budget in February.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked you this question on previous shows with you, that the money's allocated for this so-called early childhood education, but there is no plan. You know, what are you going to take 3-year-olds into classrooms? You're going to distribute the money to parents. I still am baffled that something like that, that has that many dollars involved and taxpayer dollars, there's no plan to spend the money. That seems to be very common.
Yeah. I hate to quote another Democrat politician, but I'll quote Nancy Pelosi on this. When you have to pass the bill in order to find out what's in it, and there's an element of that when it comes to early childhood in New Mexico, what is the real game plan? And one of the challenges, as there are so many, is that you have going programs. You know, you have daycare and other preschool programs in place that people have been using for a long time. Much more, I think, innovative, much more differentiation. Now you're going to have the state coming in, taking money and putting it into these programs. And so you're going to have a significant loss of, I think, market share and potential closures among some of these privately run preschools and daycare programs. So, there's so many reasons for us to be concerned that transcend the permanent fund. And, the issue is with that kind of pot of money, I think the Democrats are going to get a free pass on the resource side of things. We'll see if the voters down the road hold them accountable on the results side of things. But that's going to take years.
Yes.
You can have a screw up in the way the program's created. But ultimately, to find out how a young child in preschool or early, 3 years old is going to do in their life and get data on that. I mean, you're talking about a decade or more, and that's a long time to wait for results. There's other states that have done this, and the results have been decidedly mixed.
Well, and that's one of the things I like about what you do, Paul. You look for best practices. You look at what other states, what other politicians are suggesting and doing and carrying out in their plans, and then you suggest the good things to come to New Mexico. So, Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, is our guest in studio today. We'll be back with more from Paul right after these messages.
This is A Fresh Thought. Listen up to Levi Lusco.
The entire book of Philippians is his thank you note. Now, how incredible is it that the dude is in prison and still cranking out his correspondence, still cranking out his thank you notes? And like I said, the entirety of the tone is all about them. It's about how they're doing. It's about him praying for them and caring for them and wanting to support them. We see in this, there's a spirit of gratitude. Now, what's amazing about this is I told you Paul's life is one that's supported by joy. But joy is fostered and fueled by gratitude. In fact, there's a connection in 1 Thessalonians 5 where Paul says that it's God's will for us to rejoice always. So it's God's will right now, in this pandemic, in this situation, that you rejoice always.
For more fresh thoughts, go to levilusco.com.
Gonstead Physical Medicine specializes in the diagnosis and treatment of spinal ligament injury, pain in your back, neck, shoulders, arms, and legs, as well as numbness in your extremities. Dizziness and bladder or bowel issues can all be symptoms. 90% of doctors treating spinal ligament injuries don't know how to determine the severity and location of this condition. At Gonstead Physical Medicine, all of the providers are trained to do this. Schedule a consultation today at gonstead-nm.com or 505-884-8585.
I'm Rob Sneed, General Manager at Power Ford. The spring and summer months are hard on your car, and that's why Power Ford makes it easy for you to take care of it. Our routine maintenance and service costs less than most of the places that started off selling batteries, brakes, and tires, or the places that promise to get you done quick or in a jiffy. Allow the Ford-certified technicians at Power Ford to help you take care of your car. Each service includes a full sanitation and disinfectant treatment. All makes, all models, and you never need an appointment. Learn more at MyPowerFord.com.
The most recent State of the Bible survey revealed that only 9% of millennials read the Bible on a daily basis. The most skeptical generation on record is also uninformed about the Word of God. Small wonder there's such lifestyle confusion. What about your own children or your grandchildren? How can you pass on your faith to a younger generation so they don't become a statistic and skeptic? We want to help you encourage a young person in your life to get excited about God's Word and all He has for them. Soaring Through the Bible by Skip Heitzig gives kids and tweens an overview of the entire Bible in an exciting travel guide format that includes fun illustrations and fascinating facts to keep them engaged. We'll send you your copy of this made-for-kids resource when you give a generous donation of $35 or more to help keep these Bible-based teachings on the air, connecting more people like you to God's Word. Call now to give, and then receive your copy of Soaring Through the Bible, 800-922-1888, or give online securely at connectwithskip.com/offer.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
At least in the top five of the most interesting men in the world, Paul Gesing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation in studio. Paul, you do some fascinating research. Your website is amazing. RioGrandeFoundation.org.
Org. Yep.
And I tell you what, I automatically go to it now. I go to it almost every day. I'm looking at all the different articles. You've got a couple of blogs. Tell us a little bit about the resources.
We have errorsofenchantment.com. That's our regularly updated blog. I've already written a piece about the election. I've written one about Rio Grande Foundation being dragged into a legislative race in New Mexico. There's a lot going on, as you might imagine. I've written extensively, and I wrote something about the George Floyd situation just earlier today. So there is no shortage of things to talk about, my friend.
Well, and we're going to mention, George Floyd has been a big deal. The last 3 days, we have been addressing racism on this program, looking at it from several different points of view. But we'll talk about that in our next segment. What I want to do now is talk about a little bit about incumbent Republicans and how the primary race has changed the folks that are going to be in the legislature, possibly. We have 112 that we're going to be that are at issue this year, all the positions, all of the House, all of the Senate. So it'll be interesting to see how it turns out. But some Republicans are not going to be there that were there last legislative session.
And there's a few retirees. Bill Payne, state senator here in Albuquerque, he retired, and there was a race to replace him. But the two that are most interesting and were interesting to us and controversial, one was Senator Jim White, who represents kind of the Four Hills area of Albuquerque and into the East Mountains. He ran against Greg Schmides. We felt like there was a clear difference there between those two candidates. White had voted for both of the governor's last two budgets, 21% increases between the two of them. He voted for the Energy Transition Act, which is shutting down Four Corners, the San Juan Generating Station, coal plant power across the state, and just putting us on a very expensive, questionable path into this renewable energy future that I think there's a lot of questions about. And why can't we use some of our homegrown natural gas a little more, which is cleaner by half than coal? But that's another issue for another day. And, there was just a very clear difference between a conservative and a very moderate to liberal Republican. And Schmides did win. It was a very late night. I went to bed at 10:30 at night after doing a lot of radio on Tuesday and did not know within any certainty what the returns were going to look like. It was a very tight margin. It did loosen up to a couple percentage points, and Schmides won. He's a hard-charging young medical doctor, and I think he's going to do a fantastic job. He is going to have opposition in the general, so he's not done running just yet. Down in Hobbs was another race. David Gallegos, another sitting representative, challenged Greg Fulfer, a incumbent senator. Not nearly the vote differential in terms of floor votes. As you might imagine, somebody from Hobbs is pretty good carte blanche to vote for conservative causes. But it really came down to a personality issue between Gallegos and Fulfer, although Gallegos used the Rio Grande Foundation Freedom Index extensively in his campaign, to the point where there were social media posts, newspaper ads, etc. Now, Fulford didn't question us, didn't call me and try to get an explanation for how these things worked. He instead took some outrageous statements and ran with them, claiming that we supported transgender in the bathrooms, transgender athletic programs, and just really wild stuff. And he also lost. So in terms of a couple of conservatives challenging a couple of moderates in the Senate, that was some welcome news for Republicans, especially since John Arthur Smith was defeated, because no longer, and one of my criticisms of the Senate, especially Republicans, is that they have kind of kowtowed to whatever John Arthur Smith, a moderate Democrat, has told them needs to be done. He's kind of been seen as the bulwark. And, you know, Smith's a nice guy, but there's a lot of policies I think conservatives can and should disagree with him on. Now the Republicans are going to be kind of out there on their own. They've got to not only win races come this fall, so fielding candidates in some Democrat-leaning districts or districts that had elected moderate Democrats, so that's going to be a challenge, coming up with the resources, coming up with messaging, but just in general, how are they going to react in this, you know, brave new world post-John Arthur Smith, post-moderate Democrats in the state Senate? It's going to be very interesting. It's going to be a little bit like watching somebody who's been on a boat for a long time come onto land and how they weeble wobble, or vice versa, been on land and suddenly on a boat and they're going to get their sea legs. We'll see. It's going to be very interesting.
Paul, you've mentioned this a couple times on the program where, you know, for the Democrats to get something done, even though they have had the majority of representation in the state of New Mexico, both in the Senate and the House, they still need Republicans to get things done. And of course, the Republicans
needed.
Well, and that may totally change when we have this election. So it's even more important. I guess I want to make two points here. One, we have got to encourage people to vote. We've got to encourage people to educate themselves. And again, I want to point out your website. It's a fascinating website to me. You can get a lot of information about the individual candidates. What kind of information will you be putting out about candidates and things that are now going to be on the ballot for November?
Well, the most notable thing we're going to do is ask legislators of all parties to sign a pledge not to raise taxes. And that situation, as we discussed earlier, is a little less pressing than before, given the likelihood of tapping the permanent fund. But I still think it's very important to get legislators on and candidates on record saying, out of this huge economic crisis, we are going to give businesses, taxpayers a pass on paying more to the state of New Mexico. We're going to find a solution without taxing you more. That's the critical
and
number
Paul,
one
explain,
thing.
Explain, though. You're not just saying, hey, I don't want to pay any more taxes. You actually have data from a national organization that comes out and researches and says, look, when we look at the tax base in New Mexico compared to the income averages, the citizens cannot afford any more taxes.
Yeah, a 2018 study by the Mercatus Institute. They're free market, but when you rank states, it's pretty straightforward. You can either take the results or leave it. It's good quality information, basically saying that relative to other states, New Mexicans can afford less in the way of additional taxes than the citizens of any other state in the entire country. So there's that. Then there's the business friendliness, the economic freedom aspect. New Mexico, you're competing with not just every other state, you're competing with internationally, Mexico, et cetera. But when push comes to shove, who are New Mexico's competitors? It's Arizona, it's Utah, it's Colorado, it's Oklahoma, it's Texas. Those are the states that we compete against. And all of them are among the most free, healthy, economically vibrant. People are moving there in droves because of that economic freedom, because of the job opportunities. And we are kind of this lonely, government-dependent, oil and gas, riding the wave state that needs to desperately change its policies. And raising taxes isn't the solution, to be sure. Tapping the permanent fund is not really even the solution either, although if push came to shove, I would rather tap the permanent fund than raise taxes right away. I think that's the better of two terrible options.
Well, let's keep talking about the economy. And this question was down a little bit lower on the list, but I want to raise it up here. And I want to talk to you about some positive news. Amazon's coming to New Mexico. Yeah. They're going to hire 1,000 people. But as you tell us a little bit about that, I also want you to explain why New Mexico is not necessarily the most attractive place to come and do business.
Well, there's a lot of reasons. Our tax structure, the gross receipts tax, our lack of a right to work law, our Davis-Bacon law, I think there is an issue of government risk. And this is something you hear from a lot of corporate types when they're looking to invest in, say Latin America or African countries that have traditionally struggled. They see government policies that, you build a new factory. Well, we like that factory too. We're going to take it or we're going to change our tax policy. I'm not saying we're quite in the 10-pot dictatorship level in New Mexico, but we're definitely more high on the list and questionable than our neighbors, which are all very business friendly. Now, Amazon, they have a great incentive to be in New Mexico that transcends public policy. Simply put, they have distance to overcome. And, you go back east, you go to a lot of states, they all have Amazon distribution centers. They have major population areas. They want to get their stuff to you as quickly as possible. And if you're in Phoenix or Denver or Salt Lake City or Dallas, it takes a good long time for a truck to go to Albuquerque, New Mexico or Las Cruces or whoever. So Amazon, held out. They took a while and we're not giving them many subsidies at all. There's some money in it for road improvements and kind of interchange issues, electrical utilities and the like. So it's a good free market development to have Amazon coming here. Now, is this going to revolutionize the state economy? Look, we look at things from a systematic perspective. How many businesses have we lost during the COVID-19 epidemic? We lost Raytheon. We've lost other businesses, big and small, during this whole situation. And we're not done yet. The announcements are going to continue to hit. So having 1,000 people working at Amazon is very good news. It is a feather in the cap of New Mexico in a sense that we're a big enough fish that they have to come here. Of course, Amazon's seen a huge boost in their business too. So, during this crisis, so they probably had an additional incentive to get another, distribution center going. But, it is pretty much unadulterated good news, but don't think it's going to somehow result in peace and prosperity across the land for New Mexico, because of that one move by a major corporation.
Well, I can't help but think about other economic things that our state is doing that you've actually expressed some question about. For example, the film industry in the state of New Mexico. It's my understanding that we are contributing 25% of the gross revenues back to these filmmakers, which has created a pretty big bill for the state of New Mexico. And it's kind of hard to figure out or calculate whether or not we've had the economic benefit of the money that we've spent on the film industry.
Yeah, well, the studies that we've seen both through New Mexico's film office and other entities that have looked at film subsidies across the country shows that that is a negative. One of the challenges that everybody faces right now is that, to my knowledge, film has not opened up their doors yet to do more filming. Of course, that is actually saving New Mexico tax dollars for the time being. So it's a mixed bag. It's kind of like having the Rail Runner shut down. You spend a lot of money to get them here, but now you've got this train idling. The film subsidies are the same kind of deal. But again, we're seeing, and ironically, the Democrats who won these races were called Stop Corporate Democrats, and they ran on kind of a smorgasbord of issues, everything from pro-choice, the winners, the progressives, to tapping the permanent fund, John Arthur Smith, fiscal issues, gun issues, you name it. It was kind of a hodgepodge of progressive deals. But the number one corporate welfare program in the state of New Mexico, by a long shot, with a bullet, so to speak, as they say on the FM station, well, your FM too, but the record playing station, so to speak, it's the film industry. And they didn't touch them. In fact, those progressives are more than likely than anybody to defend the film industry and to keep pouring our tax dollars into them. So it's a frustrating thing. And, it's going to be tough for groups like ours and in general people to get much in the way of reform. We were kind of optimistic that out of COVID-19, we were going to have a decision to be made in Santa Fe. Are we going to just keep government growing and spending more and more and more? Or are we going to see some cuts and some needed reforms? Well, that difficult choice based on Tuesday night and John Arthur Smith losing, again, Senate Finance Committee, likely takes that off the table and gives them carte blanche for the permanent fund. It's not a free path, but it's much freer than it was before.
Yeah. Paul Gessing, president of the Rio Grande Foundation, in studio with us this afternoon. We've been talking about the election that happened Tuesday, changes on the Democrat and Republican side for candidates that will be running in the general election in November. We are going to talk now about where we've been talking a little bit about the economy in New Mexico. When we come back, I want to ask about another project down south. We've been expecting some commercial flights to space, and nothing's happened down there for a while. We'll be right back with Paul Gessing. Stay with us.
How does KNKT mean business? KNKT is in the business of sharing the gospel. KNKT is also supported by local businesses who we, in turn, encourage you to support with your patronage. Here's Steve Ryman visiting one such business.
We recently had a chance to catch up with Buck Buckner, the owner of Rain Tunnel Car Spa. Here's what he had to say about doing business locally.
Hey, Budge. Car Spa and other local businesses are joining forces to launch a campaign called Local First. It's a call to action to spend our hard-earned money with locally owned businesses. Why local? For every dollar spent at local businesses, the economic impact on our local economy is 3 to 4 times that of the same dollar spent at a non-local entity. With them, profits beyond minor repairs are exported. Local businesses reinvest in the community again and again. Local businesses are completely dependent on community support and thus have a much deeper tie to the neighborhood. Local businesses are as competitive as non-locals. They hire local, promote local, and operate with far less employee turnover. National tenants are not a critical piece of our local economy and arrive only years after local business success. Where are those nationals? Sports Authority, Marcello's, Borders, Raley's, Copeland's, Zia's. Poof. Gone. Legislators, along with American Express, suggest we take one day to buy local. Nice thought. Don't they know our local businesses operate 365 days per year? So think, act, and do local first. Shop local, dine local, wash local, bank local, construct local, search engine local, follow local media. And finally, to increase the coffers for an even greater Albuquerque, keep it local.
To hear your business featured on KNKT, email advertise@knkt.com. Do you have an old clunker or a good running vehicle? Donate to Joy Junction. It can help bring hope to the homeless. If it's in good condition, great. If not, no problem. Running not required. We'll take it. Just contact us and we'll take care of the rest, even towing. Just call 505-217-9586. Your vehicle donation will help us provide housing for Albuquerque's homeless families. Joy Junction, bringing hope to the homeless. Won't you help? Here's Joy Junction CEO, Elma Reynolds.
Joy Junction has been serving homeless families, men and women, for more than 33 years now. And it's a dream come true for our late founder, Jeremy Reynolds, to have a new additional space to give more dignity and privacy to those who come to our doors. But we need your help. Your generous donation means hope to somebody, and we are here to be that hope.
For more information, go to joyjunction.org. Be that hope. Go to joyjunction.org.
On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
Thank you for staying with us on ABQ Connect. You've heard the words when it comes to national politics and New Mexico politics. You've heard the word conservative, kind of rarely in New Mexico. You've heard the word moderate, and you hear the word progressive. Paul, what do those terms mean?
Well, there are many terms involved in politics, and those are three important ones. Progressive is a term, though, that goes back a good 100 years, and especially at the turn of the 19th century, from 1800 to 1900, you had progressives pretty much dominating both parties. It's one of the reasons I think New Mexico's got some of those crazy aunts in the closet in terms of the way it does things, specifically like the mandate that you have an adequate education, whatever that means. And, you know, you can drive a truck through that with a legal argument. But, you know, you got Teddy Roosevelt, you've got, Woodrow Wilson. Those are two of the big progressives in American history. Basically at that time, there was a shift away from traditional constitutional free market approaches to the issues that presaged the New Deal, and that was much more along the lines of rule by the elites, rule by the policy makers, the people with specific education, credentials, et cetera, et cetera. And we're saying, you know, this is progressivism is rampant in our country and our politics. They're ascending in New Mexico, certainly, and taking over much of the traditional Democratic Party. And that's going to be one of the battles to continue to watch as we see the political races unfold and policies unfold. But, you know, just in this crisis, no one thinks of Donald Trump as a progressive, but the idea that these doctors, Fauci and Bricks, because of their medical expertise, they're suddenly policy experts about economic issues and constitutional liberty issues and how we open up our economy. Now, Trump had some instincts early on to push back against them and then kind of got rolled by them for a variety of reasons. But the progressive idea is experts rule. And that's why we see the left reacting the way they are to the COVID-19. The left is much more dominated by progressive thought. Now, that's a long definition, but they won't put it in Webster's, but your listeners hopefully can take something from it. Conservative, in my view, is much simpler. It's in the United States, it is a view towards the Constitution and limited government, broadly speaking, personal liberty as opposed to experts or politicians. That is the broad U.S. definition. Back in Europe, and one of the problems that Europe, I think, has systematically is that they never had a constitution like ours to organize their principles around. A conservative historically meant somebody who supported the king. Well, the United States has never had the king, thankfully, and our conservative philosophy and definitions are much more honed towards defending, conserving the Constitution. Moderate, what do I have to say? It's just some amalgamation. It's not really a philosophy. It's some kind of grab bag of all of those different things. And, you know, progressives are not always progressives. Conservatives are not always conservative, let alone politicians that are represented because they're running for office trying to get as many votes. So they are an amalgam of those. And when they're moderates, that's the tendency, though, in moderates is that, especially among politicians, they like government power here. They like government power there. They like government power everywhere because it directly benefits them. So moderates can be the most dangerous in many respects.
Well, Paul, I'm thinking of the bank account while I'm talking about all three of these so-called orientations to politics. I'm thinking about the bank account. We all saw earlier in the week the successful launch of the SpaceX vehicle and the successful docking of the space station. And it was really cool. I miss seeing launches from American soil and all of those things. I remember back in the days of Walter Cronkite and the countdowns and all of those really – they were just fascinating when I was very young, and I still enjoy them. So, you know, congratulations to them. SpaceX really accomplished something, and it looks like there's a way for that to be a profitable thing. But most New Mexicans are going to want to talk about those three political orientations. Mm-hmm. We have a $275 million spaceport. We have Virgin Galactic Company that so-called was going to sign a lease and employ people and start taking manned space trips to outer space. Do we have any hope of that actually happening?
Well, hope, yes. Hope springs eternal, just like the Chicago Cubs for many years trying to win the World Series, and eventually it did happen. And New Mexico's kind of in the same boat. Now, I'll state this as a preface. Because we are fiscally conservative, because we believe that government's jobs should be few and limited, Rio Grande Foundation has been one of the leaders in opposing the construction of Spaceport America and the pouring of additional resources in, because it started as $225 million and the price has grown dramatically since then. In fact, Elon Musk and SpaceX, notably, they launched where? Cape Canaveral, which is pretty much a pre-existing facility with a few retrofits to, you know, go beyond the days of the space shuttle and move forward in a more, you know, hopefully responsive, you know, using private space flight, kind of way. And just let me say that from the kind of free market libertarian perspective, having private companies involved successfully in the space exploration business is fantastic because, you know, of course, you go back to Kennedy and the first man on the moon. That was a Cold War phenomenon. It was us versus them. We're going to beat the Ruskies up there. And it was a government program to do that. I'd like to see more of the marketplace weigh in. And even if it's just contractors as opposed to government bureaucracies organized to take these folks into space. But yeah, SpaceX is obviously way ahead of the game where we're here in New Mexico waiting and waiting and waiting for Spaceport America over the COVID crisis. And I don't think we talked about it. They did do a glide of one of the space vehicles, but you know, it's a long way from doing glide landings to launches to people on those launched ships. I mean, we're still talking about a good couple of years, in my estimation, before we see paying customers flying out of the Spaceport America. And that's kind of based on my readings of tea leaves, statements from Virgin Galactic, newspaper articles. It's not rocket science to figure this out, pardon the pun, but it's a definitely a way to understand where things are, knowing that there's a lot of permitting, a lot of issues still to overcome there. And SpaceX has obviously done it. I don't know when those they're up on the space station.
Yes.
And I know that parts of that spacecraft have landed already. But I don't know how the whole thing's going. Obviously, it's kind of like, unfortunately, too many weddings. You're there at the beginning. You're all there. You're excited. You want to see it all. And then, oh, they divorced 10 years ago. Well, you know, we're assuming that everything's going to be okay with this launch and SpaceX and returning those astronauts. But it's a really neat development.
What it sounds like to me, though, is that the United States government is paying a private company to do this work. So,
exactly.
Again, it's coming from taxpayer monies.
Yep.
I find it fascinating that, you know, I guess maybe there will be settlements in space at some time. There's all kinds of dreams that people, engineers, and, you know, years ago, we watched Star Trek where they would just tap the little logo on their shirt and that's how they would communicate. They
yep.
called it the communicator. Well, now we have communication devices like cell phones and things, and these are not very old. I mean,
no.
I can tell you, when I first, came on the campus of Calvary Albuquerque, Skip Heitzig, the pastor here, had one of the very first bag phones that you would carry in your car, and then had one of those brick phones that
yep.
I can only imagine that how that was radiating your head, because the thing was as big as your head, and you had to get the bicep workout to use it. But all of that technology has developed so rapidly. I'm sure that there's some way this is going to happen, but taxpayers have been footing this bill.
Yeah.
And I understand now that there's going to be another $80 million required to update the facility so that research and development can continue.
Yeah, you're talking about Spaceport America and New Mexico tax dollars. Now, just to be clear, I am not excited. We just talked about the Constitution and limited government. It is a very questionable issue as to the role of the federal government. It's certainly nowhere in the Constitution. You can make arguments on both sides, and I know good conservative folks who do advocate for the space program. I will say that the finances make a heck of a lot more sense doing it privately. There's a lot of good things happening. And quite frankly, the space shuttle was a pretty darn dangerous vehicle in its time and service. So just from an astronaut safety perspective, obviously we have one successful case here at SpaceX, but you know, the space shuttle had its problems throughout its existence. Of course, the state of New Mexico, you know, it, as a metaphor goes, I would say that the closest thing would be maybe the Wright brothers had one successful flight at Kitty Hawk, and then the state of New Mexico jumps on the bandwagon and starts building airports for the soon-to-be-held future of airplane flight. Now, it's even different from that because, you know, obviously things started to literally take off very quickly once aviation was kind of becoming safer and more reliable and consistent and all those kinds of things. But the spaceport issue and the spaceport race, there's other states that have them. There's existing spaceports from previous launches like Cape Canaveral. And we have a lot of challenges to overcome. But again, we're not likely to see a lot of accountability and budget restraint in Santa Fe if they are able to tap the permanent fund. So that's going to be a real food fight down the road when presumably the legislature in 2021 taps into it. And what is it used for? And where do we go from here as a state if they're able to do it? That will be voted on by the people. You talk about an intense political argument. That is going to be one of them.
Well, since this is a current event show, we can't go without talking a little bit about COVID-19, talking about the tragic death of George Floyd. That's going to lead us into talking about police unions and teacher unions. So stay with us for our last segment with Paul Gessing. We'll be right back.
Here's Ava, the owner of Monroe's.
Dad, I think we're in deep doo-doo.
Is that why everyone keeps buying all the toilet paper?
Actually, New Mexico culture is rich. Plus, Monroe's has red chili, green chili, and the best customers in the world to go with it.
Boy, Dad, you must really love our customers.
I sure do, just like I love you, Stella.
Hey, what about me?
Of course you too, Ava.
Treat yourself to a delicious Monroe's meal. See Monroe's menu at monroeschili.com. Then call in your order to Monroe's on Osuna at 881-4224 or Monroe's downtown at 242-1111 for carryout or free delivery.
Listen to this hotspot with Skip Hitek.
Now, a lot of Christians, I have noticed, make a big deal about the miraculous. And God is a God of miracles. He can do everything he wants. But God most often works through providence rather than the miraculous.
And here's the rundown on providence.
Providence is the idea that God takes natural events and he enacts supernatural results.
Hotspot. Want more from Skip? Visit connectwithskip.com. God can use anything in your life.
It's never an oh no moment for God. God never says, oh no, what am I going to do now? He says, this is perfect. I'm going to weave this for a supernatural outcome, these natural experiences.
Increase your Bible knowledge with Skip's reading plan. Search for Skip Hitek in the YouVersion Bible app.
God sees your whole life.
Your whole life.
And knew your whole life before you were ever born.
Ever born.
You're just discovering what he saw in the beginning.
Since the Bible is the Word of God, since it does reveal the character of God, since it alone describes salvation and eternal life, since all these things are true of God's Word, how important is it to know what every word of Scripture means? Hi friends, John MacArthur here. There's only one way to tap into the power of Scripture, and that's by immersing yourself in it regularly. Every day on Grace to You, we unpack the Bible verse by verse, precept upon precept. And there's no better way to spend 30 minutes of your day. So join us here on this station for Grace to You.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on KNKT. On KNKT, this is ABQ Connect with Jim Williams.
We are back on ABQ Connect. Thank you for joining us. Paul Gessing is the president of the Rio Grande Foundation. Paul, I'm always fascinated with all this great history, you know, and thanks for being here. I really do.
I read all the time. I listen to podcasts often, even when I'm working. As long as, you know, it's kind of like the old Rush Limbaugh line, I'm tying half my brain behind my back. If I have the capacity to do that, I will listen to a podcast. There's things I do that obviously take a lot of my mental faculties, and then I have to turn those podcasts off. But I just love to be a sponge for information and try to relay it to folks like yourself, your listeners, whoever else is willing to listen. And unfortunately, New Mexico, it's challenging, but you know, it's still fun to have a challenge.
Well, Paul, I'm always trying to challenge people in the faith community. I want Christians to use their brains. I want them to educate themselves. I want them to understand the issues, who the people are, what they're doing. And, you know, we know that we can't just vote for people that are exactly like us. And there's a lot of people that are Christians that are Democrats, and they're pro-life, and they have moral standing on issues that we have. But they may be not as fiscally conservative as we want them to be. So you provide us a way to find out how people feel about those various issues. We have the Right to Life Committee, and we have the Family Policy Alliance and Vince Torres on, mm-hmm. and they talk about right to life issues and parenting issues. And a lot of those things dovetail with the ideals you have mm-hmm. And your freedom index, because you want less government, more freedoms. So the perspective is really good. I appreciate the resources that you provide to all of us. I want to summarize a couple things that we've done this week. We were talking about George Floyd. On Monday, I had Bishop David Cooper of the New Hope Full Gospel Baptist Church and Ron Wallace, who is a former University of New Mexico football player. We went to college together, and he is a publisher of the Perspective New Mexico magazine, which is a magazine designed to encourage the black community and talk about successes and things that are going on and opportunities. So both of these men have been leaders in our community, and they're both black. So they gave us their perspective on their own personal experiences with racism. And I'm kind of shocked that I'm so insensitive. Mm-hmm. To not know how they have to deal with things. They have to be on high alert today. Both of these men are leaders in our community, and they have to be on high alert. Now, I'm not pointing the fingers at anybody, mm-hmm. But bottom line is that they have a different experience living day to day than I do. So the next day, I ended up having a nice conversation with Pastor Jesse Lusco. He's the pastor of Calvary Westside. He's on this campus quite frequently, and he's a very young man. Very passionate plea about how Jesus stood by the oppressed. And that was his ministry, to take care of the poor and the oppressed. And equality and the way we are created in the image of our Creator, none of those things are debatable mm-hmm. spiritually from our perspective. So he gave us a real good view on how Christians should fight against racism. And then I wanted to take a completely different view, which I haven't heard anybody else talk about. I had Chris Sweeten, who Chris is a certified law enforcement trainer, and he trains a lot of security people. He's the chairman of the New Mexico Security Officers Association, which is a nonprofit that sets standard for security personnel around the state. And he told us very simply in the 8 minutes of video that you can see, it's published everywhere on the internet, that just in that 8 minutes, he could see the principles of use of force and the reactive control model were violated. The police officers didn't do anything mm-hmm. in those 8 minutes that they should have done. For example, he said, when you're handcuffing someone and you have them on the ground, part of the technique, and I hope I'm not misstating this, but you don't take your knee and put it on somebody's neck. That I'm not misstating. No. That, you don't do that. Now, you might have your knee on their shoulder blade for a very short time, but as soon as they are handcuffed, you are to roll them over on their side and or sit them up so that they can lean mm-hmm. against a wall with their hands behind them. That is standard protocols. Mm-hmm. There's no leaving someone face down. And I saw one picture that actually looked like the police officers were all kneeling on top of him at one point. So the bottom line is we don't want to comment. There's so many amazing police officers mm-hmm. out there. But there's a few bad apples, people that lose it for whatever reason. But I want to ask you about how COVID-19 might have affected George Floyd.
Yeah.
Because it does have some relevance.
Well, it's not a question of might have. It's been reported, although not as widely and not as significantly. And I think there's reasons for that, unfortunately. Because the media do have narratives, and they're, I think, unfortunately, a lot of them, not all, just like anybody else, you can't say everybody, but a lot of media outlets have a desire to really stoke unrest and personal animosity and racial animosity, unfortunately.
Yes.
But all that being said, this man, George Floyd, was working at a restaurant in Minneapolis. That restaurant was closed by the state's governor, just like so many of them were here in New Mexico. He lost his job. He was out counterfeiting, unfortunately, $20 bills and got caught. And that's when he had his, tragic, unfortunate interaction with the Minneapolis Police Department. Now, there are 1,001 issues with the way that all went down. You described many of them very effectively. But when I look at economic issues, and there is no question that the COVID-19 issue became front and center an economic issue. And we're still going to be unraveling details and impacts of that for years to come. But the fact that this poor man lost his job, probably, I think, unnecessarily, certainly at the hands of governors, government overreach, I think that fact needs to be considered and discussed in a more broad context. The other aspect is police unions. Now, you're right, there are plenty of great police unions, but we are talking about a parallel here between police unions and teacher unions.
Yes.
What we have, without question, in police forces, as well as education, is government monopolies. Now, government monopolies have inherent, any monopoly has inherent issues with accountability. That's why the government comes in with antitrust and breaks them up very often. Government monopolies have further issues because they get politically driven and it becomes a lobbying race who can do more with electoral politics. So there's those inherent factors. And I just think that while it may be difficult to have kind of the private police force model, I do think it begs the question of how do we reform police unions in the near future. But I also do think, and you know, we see disproportionate impact on poor and minority communities. Check with police, check with education systems. So how do we, as free market adherents, people who support reform of both of these structures, talk about the parallels and the relevant information. We have what could be a very interesting, very hopefully successful left-right coalition talking about reforming police unions. That has not obviously shifted over to the education union yet, but I do think it's important for people to consider, contemplate, and understand that monopolies have serious problems with them. When you have unions operating within those monopolies in a political context, you throw in additional issues. So there's definitely some momentum here in New Mexico and across the country to do something about police unions. And it's not that police unions are always bad, and it's certainly not the case that all police are bad. However, unions, I mean, what do? Their primary goal, aside from politics, is protecting kind of the least capable, the least successful people in any given workforce. And this guy who killed George Floyd, I mean, he had 17 complaints against him. I think it was between 13 and 17. And he could have and should have probably not been in that position. He should have been gone a long time ago from that police force. So,
well, and Paul, you mentioned the right to work laws that mm-hmm. many states have adapted. And again, not necessarily recommending that in short order, but as an option, people ought to be aware that that's an option. And that is simply the ability for you to choose to be part of a union or not.
Yeah. And technically, all of those police officers already have right to work because Janus, the decision on that, the U.S. Supreme Court impacted public sector, so government employees. But you know, people are not generally members of these organizations because they're forced to be. There are many, and mostly in more run-of-the-mill, like office jobs. But in terms of law enforcement, they get a lot of benefits and a lot of limited accountability. Sovereign immunity is another issue. I'm not a lawyer, but that is something that needs to be considered as well. And there's a lot of systematic issues in addition to the racism issue and whatnot that definitely need to be addressed coming out of this.
Well, Paul, I mean, the stuff that's going through your brain and out is got to be at least 10 times what's happening in my own life. So I don't know how you keep track of all of this information. It's amazing what you do. The RioGrandFoundation.org is an amazing website, and you can get a lot of information. We're hoping that all of our listeners will spend some time not only on the RioGrandFoundation.org, but some of the other websites we've mentioned. I even love the League of Women Voters. They've got some cool stuff as well. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Always good to see you, especially in person now.
All right. We'll get you back in about 3 weeks.
All right. We'll be right back.
ABQ Connect with Jim Williams is a production of KNKT. The views expressed on ABQ Connect do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff or management of KNKT. If you missed any or part of today's show, get the free podcast at abqconnect.online.